It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We check in on research to produce sustainable fuels from plants to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. The Biden administration set a near-term goal of increasing production of sustainable aviation fuel to 3 billion gallons per year by 2030. Call in with questions and comments about biofuels, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Mary Blanchard is Associate Director of the Wisconsin Energy Institute that's based at UW-Madison. Mary, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
So biofuels being such a broad category as it is, ethanol, one of the most common types that we might think of, and Americans have been pumping the corn-derived ethanol into our cars for decades. How do biofuels being developed today differ from ethanol?
So ethanol is developed through a process of fermentation, and again, coming from corn. And it has an energy content of about 76,000 BTUs per gallon. And because it still has some alcohol on the or oxygen on the molecule, it can't be a 100% drop-in. So that's why we have flex fuel vehicles that could use higher percentages of ethanol. So ethanol is usually typically limited to a 10% blend, or if E15 is allowed, up to 15%. But there are people now working on biofuels that would be 100% drop-in replacements for traditional fossil fuels, but instead coming from biomass. So would be, you know, essentially a gasoline or a diesel fuel that could be a 100% drop-in. So better performance characteristics, and that there would be no need to transport it separately. So ethanol cannot go in pipelines because of the oxygen that's on the molecule. It has to be carried by trucks and then splash blended closer to where it's being delivered to consumers.
So what is the advantage of using biofuels over fossil fuels?
Well, there's a very significant advantage in reducing greenhouse gas emissions and also the opportunity to have homegrown energy, utilizing materials grown on farms or forestry materials to make energy can create economic opportunities for rural areas in the country.
So would that be like woody biomass as an example?
Woody biomass is an example. Obviously, we know about corn, but you could use corn stover, which is the remainder part of the corn, or materials like perennial grasses like switchgrass or sorghum or even organic waste materials can be used to make fuels or chemicals. There's a company right now that is fermenting flue gas coming out of industrial processes into ethanol, for example. So using that gaseous waste of the carbon dioxide in that flue gas.
There are also these debates over ethanol's carbon intensity and whether corn-based ethanol is actually better for the environment than what we have with petroleum-based fuels. How do you view that scientific debate that's going on and how ethanol actually relates to climate change?
So there is the EPA, in the process of creating the renewable fuel standard, which is the policy that really that makes the market for renewable fuels, does what's called a life cycle assessment, and that really looks at the growing of the feedstock, the process to make the fuel, and then the transportation to the end consumer, and that assesses what is the greenhouse gas emissions for that whole process. And so, ethanol meets the requirements that have been set for their category of, that it is reducing compared to gasoline. It is reducing greenhouse gas emissions. I think some of the questions that come from the utilization of corn is, as the feedstock, is from a landscape perspective of the monocultures, of it being a single culture, and what are strategies for having sort of sustainable and healthy landscapes associated with biofuels production. At the Great Lakes Bioenergy Research Center, which is based at the Wisconsin Energy Institute, they are looking at the utilization of marginal lands for growing bioenergy crops and converting non-food biomass into fuels and chemicals that would traditionally be sourced from petroleum.
What would qualify as marginal lands?
Well, those are lands that the farmer has decided that are not suitable for food production. You know, so, you know, as you drive on, you know, the highway, you'll see space that's being used for fuel, you know, used for crop production and areas that aren't. And so somewhat less fertile lands that might benefit from having perennial crops on them.
We're talking about biofuels and their production with Mary Blanchard, Associate Director of the Wisconsin Energy Institute at UW-Madison. Call in with questions and comments at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Mary, last month, Chevron Renewable Energy Group announced that it is closing biodiesel plants in both Iowa and Wisconsin, citing economic conditions that have become very harsh, they said. How challenging is the market for biodiesel right now?
So first of all, I am really sorry for the employees of the biodiesel plants that are closing. It's a sad loss to not have a biodiesel plant here in Wisconsin anymore. I think what's happened in the production of bio-based diesel fuels is that there's a different production capability that makes something called renewable diesel that is still using plant oils to make a bio-based diesel product, but it is made in an oil refinery using different processes. It's hydrotreating that vegetable oil, and that fuel has can be a 100% drop-in for diesel fuel, for so fully replacing fossil diesel fuel. And its capacity has really grown over time. So it was, for example, 1.75 billion in January of 2022, and it's grown to be 3.8 billion just by the end of last year. And the EPA sets the volumes for the renewable fuel standard, and that this new renewable diesel is really filling up that the capacity that's being set by the EPA and leaving less room for traditional biodiesel, which is fatty acid methyl esters, which can only be used in 5% or 20% blends. And that, so I think that Chevron really pointed to the EPA's volume capacity as saying that that was the reason that the numbers weren't high enough to have there be space for this traditional biodiesel.
And so with the renewable biodiesel, and you had mentioned earlier about transport and pipelines, what is the capability there? Are there any benefits or drawbacks there with transport?
Given that the renewable diesel is a 100% drop-in, I'm certain that it can go in pipelines to be transported. I don't actually know whether biodiesel can be transported in pipelines. It still has an oxygen on it as well, so I would expect not, that it would have to be either, you know, transported by train or by truck to its final destination.
Mary Blanchard is Associate Director of the Wisconsin Energy Institute. That's a hub for energy research and education at UW-Madison. We are discussing advancements in biofuel technologies, and you can be part of the discussion. Call in with a question. Add your comments at 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. A new review on biofuel production in the Journal of Environmental Chemical Engineering is optimistic about a future with biofuels, concluding these fuels could help in mitigating environmental pollution and climate change, and that biofuel production technologies could transform the energy mix toward a low-carbon economy. Call in with a question. You can share thoughts, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Mary Blanchard is with us, Associate Director of the Wisconsin Energy Institute. Mary, we heard from Angela, called in from Milwaukee, to mention that the production of ethanol is washing down the Mississippi River, and those fertilizers are causing the overgrowth of corn and other types of plant life in the Gulf of Mexico, causing what's called the dead zone, and is wondering what you think of this particular challenge around ethanol.
I think that we at the Energy Institute are really focused on enabling the opportunity for perennial grasses to be utilized for fuel production, and that so that there can be, you know, great economic benefit for utilizing plants that can offer benefits to the landscape as well. So a perennial grass, for example, has very deep roots and can be as in the materials that are being used for the production of the fuel. So we have a vision where we'd move towards production using these non-food crops for fuel production.
And Mary, you cut out there for a moment, but with the deep roots of these perennial grasses, I'm wondering, what is the comparison for their energy capability, their energy output versus a traditional corn-based ethanol?
You know, I don't actually have that. I don't know. It would depend on which particular crop we're talking about. Mm-hmm. So I'm not quite sure. I don't have a number in my mind of like per acre, how much, you know, ethanol would be produced from an acre of corn versus an acre of switchgrass or energy sorghum. I'm not sure of information.
But despite the recent closing of the biodiesel plant in Wisconsin, do you think or expect to see more biodiesel plants opening in our state or around the country? What is the outlook like?
So I think with the diesel capacity, I think what's happening is that this renewable diesel is really growing. It's expected, you know, I mentioned before that it had grown significantly just in less than 2 years, two recent years, and is expected to continue to grow 30% through 2025, so that there's going to be continued growth in that capacity. And then what we're also seeing is tremendous interest in sustainable aviation fuel, where that is a sector that isn't easily electrified, as probably most listeners know that, you know, there's a more and more electric vehicles or hybrid electric vehicles on the road that are helping to replace the use of gasoline, but that they're not great solutions, especially when it comes to medium and long haul aviation. Mm. And so there's tremendous interest in developing sustainable aviation fuel. There's very big consortiums working on this, and the Wisconsin Energy Institute, through the Great Lakes Bioenergy Institute, is a research center, is also working on this, looking at isobutanol, which is an alcohol that has a greater energy density than ethanol, for that can be converted. So there's a pathway to sustainable aviation fuel that is alcohol to jet, which offers new opportunity for ethanol producers as well, where the oxygen that's on those molecules is removed, and then it's lengthened to be the same length as a traditional aviation fuel molecule. But there are a number of different pathways that can lead to sustainable aviation fuel. There is a company in Madison called Virent, which is making a synthesized aromatic kerosene that can be used in aviation fuel, and in fact was part of the fuel used to fly a jet from London to Heathrow with 100% aviation fuel just this past November. So there's some really exciting developments on the aviation fuel side to enable a replacement there.
That Virgin Airlines jet that crossed the Atlantic, fueled by waste fat and low carbon kerosene. Let's go to Duane in Minnesota. Duane, hi. Go ahead with your question.
Hi. I was listening, and I know that this show is basically talking about trying to help with our aviation stuff. However, with as much diesel fuel as is being used, I have friends around the northern part of La Crosse County and stuff, and Whitehall and things like that, that have switched over their cars to burning diesel and are using cooking oil, used cooking oil from McDonald's and Culver's and stuff like that as a viable switch to power their cars. And what is the viability of that as a larger kind of switchover? And being able to reuse our stuff.
Yes, appreciate the question, Duane. Mary, what is your response there to using those used cooking oils from places like McDonald's?
Yeah, actually, those used cooking oil has really increased in value, right, because of the ability to make biodiesel from it. And that so, it, you know, that type of feedstock can also be used to make one of the options for sustainable aviation fuel called HEFA, or hydrotreated esters and fatty acids. So, you know, they use fat, waste oil, greases and stuff to make sustainable aviation fuel as well. So there are, you know, technology pathways that can utilize that, which really increases the value of those materials. So, but I think what your friends are doing is similar to the biodiesel plant that was here in Wisconsin, which is using that process to make the fatty acid methyl ester biodiesel, or also called FAME.
Okay. Let's go to Jim in Hudson now. Jim, go ahead.
Hi, good morning. Yeah. So I've got a couple questions. First, I'm just wondering what the conversion efficiency is. I see the government subsidizes corn production and then they mandate a certain amount of ethanol based on that corn production to go into gasoline. But my understanding is that, you're putting just about as much energy into producing that ethanol as you're getting out when you use it for a fuel like that. So, you know, corn is not a good environmental product, you know, crop for the land necessarily either. And they were talking about the algal blooms
in the Gulf.
Yeah. So that was my first question. And second of all, you mentioned a little bit earlier about newer biodiesels, and I've run biodiesel and I like it. Actually, there's more BTUs in that than I think petroleum diesel. But the problem I've had with that, if you let that sit very long, especially if you're burning, you know, more like 50% biodiesel, the older type stuff, it's also extremely good solvent. And it will, if you don't have a modern type diesel motor, it can take out seals, you know, rubber seals in a motor and things like that. And also, if you let it sit very long, it kind of tends to separate out into water and plug filters and all sorts of stuff like that. So I'm just wondering what the difference is. You're mentioning a newer type of biodiesel between that and what's been produced in the past.
Oh, and what are the repercussions on the car parts there? Mary, go ahead.
Yeah, so you are highlighting some of the challenges that come from this FAME type of biodiesel, which is the more traditional one that most people know about, you know, that because of its chemical composition, it doesn't perform as well in cold weather, and it has some of these storage issues that you mentioned. And that this renewable diesel, which is, again, hydrotreating vegetable oil using a different process than the one that made the FAME biodiesel, you know, this newer product does have the same characteristics as diesel fuel. You know, so it is a 100% drop-in. It doesn't need to be blended, and it doesn't have the same challenges as traditional FAME biodiesel in terms of the cold weather performance and storage quality. So there are some advantages there, which I think is why there's been so much growth in the capacity and production of that as a renewable fuel.
In our final seconds together, I mean, we've talked about planes and cars, but how else could biofuels be used in the future?
Well, I think one of the other things that people, if we talk about it as bioenergy, is that there are many, many things that we make from a barrel of petroleum besides just fuels. We make many different types of chemicals that are in our clothing, in all kinds of products that we use, and that we are also looking at ways to replace those chemicals with renewable sources. So there's research to convert something called lignin, which is about 30% of most biomass.
Yeah.
And it is kind of like fiberglass in that it is very irregular and hard to utilize, but lots and lots of research on how to use that.
Well, we really appreciate you for joining us. Mary Blanchard with the Wisconsin Energy Institute. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.